stories don't define you. How you tell them will. Hi, I'm Sarah Elkins, your host and chief story maker of Elkins Consulting.
When we share stories, whether in our personal or business lives, how we share them makes a difference in how we remember them and in how we're perceived by the people we're sharing them with. When you're listening to this podcast, I encourage you to listen and consider your own related stories. To listen and think about which stories in your life might have impacted you in a similar way. And think about how you share those stories and the messages they carry for you and for the people who are hearing them.
Well, I'm so grateful that Callie agreed to be on the podcast today. So this is Callie Kazikoff that I am highlighting in the Your Stories Don't Define You, How You Tell Them Will podcast today. And I met Callie at a youth leadership retreat. It was a turn to virtual recently for obvious reasons. And so I was one of the speakers for this retreat. And she shared a story during this because I was talking about storytelling and personal brand. And I was completely enamored with her story. It brought back memories of my own, which of course will immediately connect you with somebody is when you share a story that connects memories. And so I asked her to be on my podcast and here she is. So thanks, Callie, for joining me today.
Thank you very much for asking me to be on your podcast. It was definitely humbling and shocking, being that I'm 20 years old and not even finished with my undergrad, and somebody found me intriguing enough to interview me, especially somebody who specializes in telling a compelling story. So I'm grateful that you recognized my story was compelling and you wanted me to share it with your audience.
Oh, I love that. And age really doesn't matter to me. It makes no difference to me. I actually interviewed my son, our younger son, who was, I think he was 16 at the time, on one of our road trips. So I'm a big believer in stories at any age. So I'm just glad you agreed to join me. So you are a student currently. Tell me a little bit about that.
So I just finished up my junior year at Montana State University in Bozeman. I grew up in Southern California and made the move out here to Big Sky Country at 17. I changed my major a handful of times. So anyway, I finally landed in accounting. This is my third year, just finished up in May. And I'm doing a lot of accounting recruiting right now, which is how I met you, Sarah, through, you know, a summer leadership program. But the most impactful thing that I've done throughout my undergraduate career, which is what I'm here to talk about today, was my semester abroad with Semester at Sea, during which I spent 4 months traveling to 15 countries while also taking 12 undergraduate credits from Colorado State University. And I left for that journey at 18, so I really learned a lot about myself. And that was just the first semester of my sophomore year. So I came back. Mm-hmm. I came back to finish up my undergrad with just a lot of lessons and wisdom that I couldn't have gotten anywhere else but the world.
Absolutely. Any of our listeners that have listened to previous episodes of this podcast know I'm a huge believer in travel as a form of education, which is part of why raising two boys here in Helena, Montana was kind of tricky because it's really hard to travel from here. It's very expensive. But we would take road trips across the country and we would, my husband and I took them to Europe for a couple weeks in 2009 when they were, how old were they? 9 and 11. And so I'm a big believer in travel as a form of education, which is part of why I knew that you would bring a good story.
Yes, Sarah, that is just extremely valuable. I was lucky to have been gifted the travel bug from my parents. My mother just taught me to value, you know, exposure to the unknown as a way to learn. And I've pursued higher education and I plan to continue throughout my adult life. But I think the most valuable lessons I've learned throughout my life have come from trying new things, meeting new people, and seeing how, you know, the rest of the world can operate and live.
Mm-hmm. So I was going to ask you, before we really get into the stories behind that, can you share something about yourself that most people wouldn't know about you or that might be surprising to people who know you now? And the reason I ask that question of my guests is that I like to put some context into the stories that we're going to hear later on by hearing something specific about a person that most people might not know. So what do you think? Do you have something in mind?
Yes, I absolutely do. So for a little added context, generally when people meet me, they have this first impression of me that I'm very put together. I know what I'm doing. I always have a plan. I'm on it. But the reality is that when it's just me, myself, and I struggle with very severe anxiety and panic attacks. And this constant, you know, weight that I carry on me is something that has pushed me to learn my own mind, my own heart, and learn how to listen to those cues that are coming from deep within me. And that is why I'm so put together, why I have it, you know, on the surface that I know what I'm doing, I have a plan. It's because I have to really adapt my life to make sure that where I can get my ducks in a row, they are, because very often I'm, you know, losing my mind just like the rest of us. I actually had my first whitewater rafting experience this weekend for Memorial Day in Idaho. And I had, you know, never been on the river before. And I was very excited, having a great time. But we tossed the boat in a class 4 rapid. Mm-hmm. And I had a panic attack in the water and went downshore about a mile before, you know, I could get to, or down the stream about a mile till I could get to shore. But I, in that moment, had to accept that there are days when I'm disabled by my emotions, and that's just the cards that I was dealt. And I think ultimately that lifelong struggle that I've had with anxiety has really pushed me to be that go-getter, that, you know, that influential person that I've become in my life, because I have had to overcome like such a natural obstacle with just my brain chemistry.
Mm-hmm. But you're finding ways to manage it. What tools are you using? Are you a meditator, or is it physical, athletic?
I definitely practice mindfulness. That's something that came to me during my semester at C. I took a 4-week meditation course during that. And although I'm not super diligent in my daily practice of sitting down and meditating, I do apply the principles throughout my day, every day. Mindfulness to me is just a way of appreciating the moment and finding value in, you know, what is, not what could be or what might be. And so realizing that, you know, what's going to happen will happen has empowered me to use my rational brain to overpower those feelings of anxiety and panic that I deal with.
So that is really helpful to know in terms of putting you into context with the stories that you're going to be telling over the next few minutes. And so I really appreciate that you shared that with me. I think a lot of people struggle with some form of anxiety, whether it's something that's treatable or needs to be treated, or whether it's something that people can manage at the lower end of that spectrum of anxiety. So I really appreciate that you shared that with me. And I'm especially intrigued by the fact that you found mindfulness to be a useful tool in that treatment, because I've been encouraging that for many years, but particularly with my coaching clients that struggle with anxiety, periodic anxiety. So it's not the lifetime experience that you've had, but it's more situational. And yep. I would say that I would be surprised if anyone I knew said that they didn't have situational anxiety. I don't think that that exists.
Absolutely. It's definitely a natural human emotion. There are some of us, however, that cross into the line of, you know, being
paralyzed.
Generally paralyzed by these feelings that are just so powerful. Mm-hmm. And I've just, it's really, instead of letting it tear me down and destroy my quality of life, I honestly attribute most of my successes to battling with severe anxiety because I've learned so much about myself and how to communicate my feelings to other people and just how to prioritize. I've gone through a lot of treatment. I've done therapy. I have an emotional support cat who is the love of my life. But ultimately I think the biggest thing is just like learning to accept that, you know, life is what it is and I have control over certain things and I'm going to use that control and power to make the right choices for myself when I can, but also, you know, learning when to take my hands out and say, this is just what my life is and I need to accept it and, you know, be grateful that I'm alive.
I call that, having grace for yourself.
Yeah.
So when you were in the water this weekend and having that meltdown and freak out, I can imagine that battle inside your head. You've got this. No, I don't. I'm freaking out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like a full conversation, internal dialogue when you're trying to calm yourself in a situation that you can't. But it sounds to me like you gave yourself some grace over that. You didn't agonize over that.
And the real battle came with once I was on shore, I walked down the road and met up with everyone else who had gotten tossed out of the boat and met up with the other boat and the three kayakers we were with. What was more challenging was recognizing that the rest of the 15 other grown adults that were with me were completely fine. They were not in this hyper aroused panic state that I was in, but learning to recognize the grace that they were giving me and the comfort that they were, you know, radiating towards me. I did not feel in that moment that I was being judged. I felt completely accepted. And up until this point, none of these people that I was with, besides my boyfriend and my one friend on the trip, none of these people had any idea that I struggle with anxiety. And so in that moment, I really had to face and accept, like, this is a part of me that is now out in the open. I can't breathe right now. I'm hyperventilating and I'm crying. And I know that in 10 minutes, I'm going to be okay. But right now, I just need to let these people love me and support me. And I decided actually to not continue with the trip. They went about another 15 miles down the river without me. And I ended up hitchhiking with some really nice girls from Idaho. And I ended up spending about 3 hours with them, just them and their dogs talking. And it ended up being just a really lovely moment. I gave myself the grace to know that I couldn't handle it if I got tossed in the water again. It was more a choice to protect myself down the line. Mm-hmm. I knew that I wouldn't be able to handle it a second time. And I just had that support and I made that right choice for myself. And it ended up being just a really wonderful experience with some strangers.
Oh, the kindness of strangers, the people on the boat that didn't know your interior struggle, but recognizing that you were in need of help. And then the kindness of those young women who picked you up and their dog. I think my first instinct was that slight panic about hitchhiking. But then as soon as you said the girls with their dog, I was like, oh, well, if they have a dog, it's probably fine.
Yeah, they actually pulled over to me and they said, what's going on? How are you? Do you need a ride? And I said, I just had a panic attack in the water. And they said, perfect. We have two support dogs here for you. And I pet them and they gave me some snacks and everything was good. But it took that moment of grace to, you know, swallow my own insecurity about being the one person on the trip that couldn't continue and really realizing like this is the hand of cards that I was dealt by God. This is who I am. This is how I was made. And ultimately I'm going to regret it if I put myself in another super vulnerable position. So I just made the choice that felt right for me in the moment. And I'm very glad that I did.
I'm glad you did too. That's a brilliant thing, a very insightful experience for you to have at 20 years old. And when it comes to age, that is one thing that I've noticed is that that wisdom can come at any age. The trick is holding on to it when you're 40, when you're 50, when you're 60, because I think sometimes we slide back. We have this wisdom and consciousness at 20 that somehow gets lost in the shuffle of life later on. So I'm for you, I'm wishing long-term insight and grace with yourself, because it's just like an addiction, it never really goes away. You just find different tools to address it.
Absolutely. And I think such a huge part of my journey with all of this and, you know, my discovery of these wisdoms, a lot of that has come from sharing my story with other people and, you know, taking my anxiety from being something that's deeply latent in me to something that I shouldn't be ashamed of, something that I need to talk about to get past. And I definitely take on that mentor role throughout my life. And I think that just like natural ability to connect and, you know, my strong sense of empathy, I'm hoping that, you know, by continually sharing my story, I can, you know, learn more as I go and hold on to the things that I've learned so far.
So I'm imagining you standing by the road and this car stopping. And how many girls were in the car? Three?
Two.
Two girls from Idaho with two dogs.
Yep.
And I'm imagining your sense of relief when you saw them and their dogs and the obvious kindness that they were exuding from their vehicle. Yep. And for some reason, I immediately visualized you on the ship during your semester at sea and having a similar experience where you were, you're nodding, so I can see it in your eyes. So tell me that story that you were able to apply what you learned from that and do it again with these women this weekend.
Well, there's several correlations that I want to touch on. For one, it was a huge risk to, you know, decide I'm going to spend roughly $30,000 at age 18 to get on a boat with 500 other college kids that I've never met before. I had barely left the country. I had never left the country without my parents. And I had just spent a year pretty much focusing on nothing other than, you know, healing my anxiety. So I made this choice. You know, I see a lot of value in learning opportunity and chances to grow by doing this crazy, absurd trip. And so I flew to Germany and I got on there and I did it. But, you know, the very first day you're sailing away from shore, knowing that this is about to be a 4-month odyssey, I circumnavigated the globe. And that very first day, every single person on the ship was a stranger. Mm-hmm. And those first few days, we had 5 days between when we boarded the ship in Hamburg to our first port in Barcelona. And during those 5 days, you really had to, you know, talk to as many people as possible to find who felt right to be your travel buddies, because, you know, we were going to be dropped off in a new country in 5 days. So we had less than a week to go from complete stranger to somebody that you feel comfortable booking trains and hostels and et cetera together. So those first few days, there was just a lot of vulnerability required just to make those connections. And granted, like, obviously everybody on the ship was a little crazy. We all had agreed to do something that the average person just can't even wrap their head around. So mm-hmm. finding that common ground of, okay, well, we're both obviously here for a reason. We have similar intentions. Let's find what else can connect us and make us more than strangers and closer to friends. And that was a similar experience to this weekend, because ultimately I was 100 miles from Missoula, deep in the woods in Idaho. We had been out of service for 2 hours before we even got to where we were at. So I had to, you know, take a leap of faith and trust that the people that were there this weekend were people who were there with the same intention to just enjoy the outdoors and celebrate Memorial Day. I had to trust their intentions, despite the fact that I had literally just had probably the worst panic attack of my life.
Ouch.
Yeah.
So there's so many pieces to this story that I'm trying to wrap my head around, and all the connections that I'm having in my head right now, like fireworks going off in my brain. Do you remember the first person that you talked to on the ship that you felt that connection with? Do you remember that experience?
I do, because the first people I met were Chris and Alex, and they were two best friends from University of Alabama that came on this trip together. And they were my shipmates directly across the hall. So while I was getting all moved in and shuffled, they came to meet me. And I just remember in that moment feeling like, all right, you know, my neighbors are people that are friendly. They're coming over to meet me. And what's crazy is they ended up being the people that I spent every single port with. And I still see those people regularly. We all talk all the time. Like that first initial meeting of feeling confident in their ability to approach me and be vulnerable with me and share with me, you know, a little bit about themselves made me more comfortable to kind of link with them to go meet other people. So I remember we had our very first meal together of the whole trip, sailing down the River Elbe out of the port in Hamburg. And I just remember feeling just so comforted to know that, all right, I have at least two friends and they're close and I feel connected to them. And Chris and I shared both being from Southern California. We had that similar background. And so that was comforting. But it just having them as a package deal and their willingness to just invite me in to be a part of it was just, I think, what ultimately gave me, you know, the power to meet more people, build a large group of friends with those two. And, you know, those are ultimately my friends for the rest of my life. Those are people that I've, you know, seen the whole world with. It was really strange the first time I saw any of them in the United States. And we live all over. So, you know, our group that, you know, formed that first 5 days, they're in Denver, Chicago, Alabama, Washington, Montana, where I am, California. We have people everywhere. And
that's awesome.
Because of the bonds that were built during the time at sea with no internet connection, really nothing to do but get to know people and talk. Like, we have really gone the extra mile to stay in touch, continue to see each other. And I have no doubt they will be my friends for the rest of my life.
There's something about that traveling together that connects you. I always tell people if you're wondering about a relationship to try taking a long road trip together because it's such a good test. Yeah. And tell me if you agree with this, but I think part of why traveling together is so good for testing yourself and your resilience and your resourcefulness. And then traveling with others is you have to be resourceful. You have to find ways to solve problems that come up unexpectedly. You know there are going to be things that are going to happen that you can't predict, but how you handle those yourself and then with a group, it's just, there's so much you can learn about somebody from that. I know when my husband and I were taking one of our first road trips together, and we had this big yellow lab in the car with us, and we decided to stop at a hotel one night, a motel, and it didn't say whether pets were allowed. So we snuck the dog in, knowing that she was a good girl, and because she's a lab, I mean, you know, very friendly and sweet. And she was house trained. She wasn't going to pee or poop in there. And we brushed her down really well before we brought her in so that she wouldn't leave a ton of hair. Like, we were trying to be very considerate and conscientious, but we weren't sure she was allowed in there. So I remember that night she barked. Somebody walked by our window because it was a motel, and she barked. And I looked at my eventual husband, my boyfriend at the time, to see how he would react to that. Was he going to freak out? Was he, you know, how was he going to handle this? Because we didn't want to get kicked out at midnight or two in the morning, whatever, out of this motel. And I loved the way that he very calmly got out of bed, snuggled the dog, told her it was okay, and then set her back to bed. And this is at a time where we were just dating, but I remember that because it was impactful, you know, seeing how he reacted to that rather than yell at her or be angry or be freaked out. He very calmly told her to calm down and she was fine. So yeah, do you remember, absolutely. Yeah. So do you remember a time when you were with Alex and
Chris,
that you had to solve a problem, that you had to be resourceful together?
Absolutely. But I think this story would be completely incomplete if I did not mention a few other very pivotal members of our SaaS crew, as we call it. So Chris and Alex, my neighbors, eventually built this larger group, myself included, with a couple who had come on the trip together named Palmer and Annabelle. They are just the most good-hearted, sweet, just passionate, God-fearing people. And they just really were the mom and dad of our entire group of, you know, young college kids. And then we also had my two roommates, Sabrina and Maddie. I shared a small cabin with two other large adults. So that was a bit tough in itself. But yeah, so me, Alex, Maddie, Sabrina, Annabelle, and Palmer, we kind of became this, you know, this family for the entirety of our voyage. And there were, I can't even tell you, countless times that life just really threw a wrench in our plans. One thing that particularly, you know, points itself out to me as something that was a real challenge was we were about 3 months into our trip at this point, and we were just totally professionals at this point of figuring out how to do overnight buses and hostels and plan excursions and volunteer trips and really whatever we wanted to do with our, you know, 4 to 7 days in every port. So we pull into the port of Yangon in Myanmar, also known as Burma. And this country was just a total enigma to us. We were just like enamored with the idea of just seeing everything it had to offer because it's a very undeveloped country. Almost the entirety of it is paved in dirt. It touches India, China, Thailand. So it's really at that crux of, you know, so many cultures that we're familiar with. But this one country is just not super well known. There's not a lot of, you know, popular media about it besides, you know, the Rohingya genocides that have been happening on its northern border. But we just felt like this country was just this big mystery, and we really wanted to maximize our time there. So what we decided to do was, I think we had 5 days in Burma, and we just decided that we were going to do something amazing every day. And that required doing several overnight bus trips, you know, 10 hours from one part of the country to the next. Cool. And so during this week, I think our group at this point, I don't believe Alex and Chris were with us. I think it was me, Annabelle, Palmer, our friend Jill, Farah, and that might be it. Our travel group at this point, we, within 5 days, we took 4 overnight bus trips. We volunteered at an elephant reserve, gave an elephant, you know, a bath in a river. Then we took a bus trip and we did hot air ballooning over just the most gorgeous lake and mountain region. We stayed at a beautiful 5-star resort for $90 a night. What else did we do? We saw so many temples. We rode bikes around Bagan, the old ancient city. There's more temples in a 10-mile radius in this city of Bagan than there are churches in all of Europe. So we really packed in just every cultural experience we could possibly have in this 5-day visit to Myanmar. And on our last overnight bus, we got pulled into Yangon, which is the capital and the major port city. And I remember it was 6 a.m. and we got off the bus and I hadn't showered in days. And I was just so relieved to be done with this crazy stint of travel. And when I was getting off the bus, I had my fanny pack with my money belt, my passport, my phone, everything. And I remember I set it on the seat so that when I got up and had put my big backpacking backpack on and had everything else settled, the last thing I was going to do was put on my fanny pack. Well, they were dropping us off outside of the city not at the bus stop because it was going to be like crazy mid-morning traffic in the capital. So they were trying to spare us from sitting in traffic for hours, and they just dropped us off at this undisclosed location outside of Yangon. And they were in a hurry to get back to the bus station to pick up another load of people and get back on the road. So they rushed me off of the bus, and I was sitting in the very back, so I was the last one to get off. And in frenzy, I got off the bus, and about 5 minutes after the bus pulled away, I realized I left my phone, passport, and all my money in that fanny pack on the bus. So at that point, I have no money. I don't have any, you know, phone, nothing. So everybody I'm with, I ask to bum a few dollars from. And in Burma, their currency is called a chat. And $5 is probably equivalent to 10,000 chat. So I have about 50,000 chat in my pocket. I flag down a taxi, and I just try my best to figure out where this bus is going through morning traffic. And my one friend, Sabrina, just the most sweethearted, kind person, she just stayed with me throughout all of it. She went with me in the taxi. She could feel my panic because the ship was leaving later that day. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a passport. And this bus was off into the distance in a country where I can't even read the road signs. Most people can't speak English. And her grace and just comforting nature in that moment, and her resilience to stick by me when I did something absurdly stupid. I broke the one rule of traveling: you can't lose your passport. But she gave me grace in that moment to not make me feel stupid, but to make me feel supported and loved. And we eventually tracked down the bus. I was so ecstatic. Nobody had taken any of my money. Everything was intact.
Wow.
And I tried to tip the bus driver. I wanted to say thank you for not messing with my stuff, but the people there are so warm and loving, and they're really, you know, community-based, neighborly people. He just was like, I'm not going to take your money. All I did was not rob you. But for me, it was just like, he gave me the key to finishing my voyage and getting back home safely. So for me, it was everything. But to him, it was just a small act of kindness.
It was integrity for him. It wasn't just kindness. Some people have integrity without kindness, but yep, he had both, it sounds yep like. Wow, that's amazing. You made my heart race. Like, my heart was pounding as you were telling me that story. Was your heart pounding just now as you were told yep it?
Absolutely. Yeah, it was one of the scariest things. Yeah.
Of course, every time. But, you know, so there are so many things about your relationship with Sabrina at that moment. For one thing, I can tell you this is something that I've learned in recent years having children. So mm-hmm our boys are big, but through their teen years, when they did something that they shouldn't have done, or, you know, something, as you said, you know, one of the most stupid things you could possibly do, every time something like that would happen, I would look at them and go, it's not like you did that intentionally. It wasn't stupid. Mm-hmm. It was, you were in the middle of something else. Your brain wasn't on it. You know, other things were going on. There's so many circumstances around it that it is your fault because you weren't paying attention. And at the same time, mm-hmm, if you get angry or frustrated, you're not looking for a solution. You're looking for somebody to blame. And mm-hmm I saw other parents doing that to their kids. Like, if something spilled, be like, why did you spill that? We weren't paying attention. They get really upset. And I saw that before I had kids. And I said that I wasn't going to have kids. I had no intention of having kids. But when we did, because I'm impulsive, I mean, that's, you know, just a given here. When we did have kids, I was watching every interaction between parents and children to take on the lessons, what they did and what they didn't do. Mm-hmm. And what Sabrina did is she demonstrated exactly that grace, that kind of grace.
Yep.
The grace that says, I'm not going to add to your punishing yourself because I know you're already doing a damn good job of punishing yourself. So I'm not going to add to that. What I am going to do is help you find solutions.
Absolutely. And that just that really resonated with me right now in my personal life, because I am going through a period of grief and a tough time in my life. My boyfriend's grandfather just got diagnosed with late stage cancer. And I actually just met him 3 weeks ago. I went to visit him in Colorado. It was a whole big thing. Please come meet the patriarch of our family, the most beloved man in all of our lives. And he was fine. And 2 weeks later, we got this call that, you know, things weren't fine and life was really about to change for him. So, you know, he's so hard on himself. Why am I in Montana? Why am I away from my family? Like, I need to get back to them. And he's so stressed. He's interviewing for a new job tomorrow down in Denver. There's just so many spinning wheels and moving pieces for him. And I'm trying to extend that grace that I've given to myself throughout my life to him, to be a rock for him while he grieves and goes through something extremely difficult and sad. So it's really just love. I just try to radiate love to everyone and anyone that will receive it. And you know, he's my partner and he's really being challenged by life right now. And I just want to, you know, continue to treat him with grace and love. And Sabrina just taught me so much in that moment. That was just the most unconditional support I could have ever received, because I was so distraught and so upset at my own actions. And she just came right in to be a calming, caring supporter. And that's the role that I'm trying to play right now in my life with Matt. So it's crazy how the lessons you learn throughout time just always come full circle.
If you're open to them.
Yes.
And that's exactly why I wanted to talk to you. Even in, it was just, okay, so my workshop that I did with your group was 1 hour.
Yep.
And each person in that group, I think there were about 18 or 20 online, and each person in that group might have said a few words during that hour, but how much time did you have for that many people to speak, right? Mm-hmm. And you spoke twice, actually I think three times, but once was just a really short introduction. But the other two times you spoke, you radiated that. I saw that, I heard it, and I think that's why I was so intrigued and reached out to you to do this recording. And part of that is, again, wishing for you to continue this journey of learning and not turn that off, because a lot of people turn it off at some point. They decide they know it all. And that's just so sad to me when people decide that at 25 or at 30, because they did a lot of interesting things, they suddenly think they know everything, and then they lose that openness. They lose that ability to exude love and grace because they turn to judgment. And so I'm just so grateful that we got an opportunity to chat and I could hear more of your story. And I know you have a lot more of this, a lot more of these stories, and just in the last 3 years. So I'm thinking when you're 30, I hope we are still in touch, because I know you're going to have even more wonderful stories that you've learned from, and you continue to apply those lessons in your own life. Because one of the things that I really talk a lot about in my keynotes and speaking with people is that you are modeling for others, just as Sabrina modeled for you.
Absolutely. I try to just radiate every lesson I've learned. And whenever there's a moment to share something that really changed me, I see it as an opportunity to share something that could change someone else. And I don't think that will turn off. I think it's so deeply ingrained in who I am as a person that, you know, my life is going to be a spinning wheel of learning and changing and growing for as long as I can see. But I would absolutely love to stay in touch. This has been a great experience, and it's really validating to hear a stranger who is a professional storyteller and a coach validate that I have that confidence and that ability to share my story in an effective way. I really, really appreciate it.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. And after we stop recording, I'm going to get your address from you so that I can send you a copy of my book, because the end of the book has worksheets to help you start collecting these stories in a story portfolio. I'm guessing that you have some journals from your time of travel. And this is just another tool to help you keep holding on to those stories, remembering the good stuff that you get out of every scenario, whether it's full of joy or full of sorrow. There's always something to be shared and growth. And there's always something to grow from those experiences.
Absolutely. Every day is a gift. And I try to, you know, close the day with appreciation and hope for another day and another lesson to be learned. So thank you for your encouragement and your work to support people who, you know, may not have as natural of an inclination to talk and share the way that I do. I think it's very important that people learn to express themselves. So I think the work that you're doing is amazing.
Thanks, Callie. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for listening to Your Stories Don't Define You, How You Tell Them Will. If you're planning an event or company retreat and want to bring in a memorable, entertaining, and highly practical speaker as your keynote speaker or workshop facilitator, please visit us at elkinsconsulting.com to learn how we can help and provide a memorable keynote or breakout session. Thank you. I look forward to hearing from you.
Could you tell me that you're going away?